Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Dr. Debra and Therapist Kelly Show, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hello, welcome. I'm Dr. Debra.
Hi, I'm Therapist Kelly.
Can you believe this weather? Yesterday it was cold and rainy. And today it's in the 80s, and it's supposed to get up into the hundreds.
That's what I heard. Kind of. I'm sort of digging the little like the fall weather. I'm a little upset that it's going back to.
Me too. I like cold.
Yeah.
So much easier to get warm than it is to cool down when it's too hot. So, but you and I are opposites.
I know. We would be in big trouble. No.
I'd be like, turn it down. He's like, turn it up. Turn it down. We'd have to have like a room divider with two separate vents.
Exactly.
I'd be schwitzing on one side.
So, but were you always hot? Like,
Pretty much, you always been hot. Took it over to a whole other level. I could be sitting in a well-ventilated, air-conditioned room and just break out into a sweat.
This is so funny. I had that happen to a lady at work. Like all of a sudden she's like, hot flash, and she like had to leave the room. I felt so bad.
I used to be embarrassed about it, and then why? It's like, this is what my body needs to do. If you're having a problem with it, you leave the room.
Well, this is really funny. I got into a huge fight with my husband last night, and sure enough, time of the month for me. So I sent him a text today. It's a picture of an ovary. It said, overreacted.
Oh, that is hysterical.
So women's issues. You can't win.
No. So I am like going nuts with this tearing up the floors, you know, and it's happening this coming weekend. These little cats are driving me crazy because
they're still going nuts.
Well, with all the disruptions in the house, and then so I found going to stay at a little mini suite at a hotel.
So that they have
their own little space, because I was going to stay at the Motel 6. They don't have any under the bed spots, and that's where they go when they're hiding. So it's like finding the right spot for my cats so that they don't freak out. Yeah. So I'm going to make it a little mini vacay over the weekend.
That's so smart. It'd be good to get. I love hotels. Like, I just feel. I'm like obsessed with hotels. You just feel so away. I don't know. I really like it. So that'll be fun.
You said you have a funny story.
That was it. My overreacted.
Oh, okay. That was
apparently
funny.
Wasn't that funny. But I was just thinking about that, how like it just summed it up perfectly, that little picture, and he loved it. So it was pretty.
That is really funny. How's David liking his job?
He loves it.
At Mattel.
He loves it.
And
loves
how big is your Barbie collection now?
No, I don't have any more, but the kids have so many toys. I mean, it's ridiculous.
Does he come back with like a new toy every week?
We try not to because, but they have to earn it. But I mean, he doesn't get them all for free. So it's like some of them we have to purchase, which I think is a good thing because I don't want them to, get used to Christmas every day.
Well, your oldest son was really good when we were up away when we did the camping thing and we went into, what was it, the ostrich farm?
Oh,
and there was something he wanted and you were really good. You told him that he had to use some of his savings to be able to purchase this thing. And he wanted to go over his budget. And it was a whole negotation.
Yes. But he is really good with money. Well, actually,
we have a great
segue for our
desk.
But my older son's really good with money, but his new obsession is lottery tickets. This is so funny, and he's obsessed with it. So for using his own money, he wanted to buy a $20 lottery ticket. Okay, this is really funny, and I'm like, are you sure? I was like, Remy, maybe you're better off buying $21 ones. He's like, nope, I want to buy that. He looked at the cards, like 20 chances to win or whatever it was. So I kind of hoped that he wasn't going to win so that he could see that it was a waste of money. Sure enough, he broke even and he tells everybody, I won $20 in the lottery ticket.
He won
$20. And he's so smart too, because it said like, you can win 10 times this amount, right? And it was $2. And so he's like, Mom, he like figured it out immediately. He's like, I won $20. I'm like, no, you didn't. I'm like, let me see. I didn't believe him. But so now he's obsessed.
Oh my gosh, that is hysterical. Okay.
We might need our guest today to talk to him.
We do need our guest. And so let's just chat for a minute about last week's guest, which was Holly Hawkins Marwood. And she talked to us about Akashic
Records.
That was
so cool, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Oh my God, she was right on with my stuff. I could not believe it. And my friend from Boston, who's big into this, was listening and she couldn't believe it. I mean, it was such a neat, neat thing to talk about. And I just feel like a lot of people don't know about the Akashic Records and sort of that whole spiritual world. So I thought it was great. She did a great job.
I have to thank my daughter, Tiffany, for that introduction. Because
thank you so much,
Tiffany.
She went
to one of her classes up there, and she just loved her. All right. So let's have a word from our sponsor, and then we will introduce our guest.
Hello, this is Ian Oliver, author of the best-selling book, Getting Back on Top, encouraging you to go visit my website, secondchanceatromance.com, where you can find a link not only to the book, but to lots of articles and interviews that will help you with your dating, relationships, and sex after divorce. And remember, all of the profits from our activities go to two very important children-related charities, so it's all going to a great cause, helping you and helping them. Go for it. Thank you.
Thank you, Ian. I think that's so awesome that he's giving all of his
all
proceeds.
Of his profits. Isn't that so wonderful?
He's a cool guy. So check out his stuff. And if you'd like to give us a call today, you can do so at 323-203-0815. Again, 323-203-0815. And we have a fantastic guest in studio today. His name is Danilo Kawasaki, the co-founder, vice president, and COO of Gerber Kawasaki, a wealth and investment management firm. Danilo received his BS degree in business administration from the University of Redlands, where he was an All-American student athlete. Danilo also received a certificate in personal financial planning from UCLA and is a certified financial planner. Professional. Danilo was born and raised in Sao Paulo, Brazil, where he was a top-ranked junior tennis player. Ooh, that's exciting. Growing up in Brazil, Danilo learned the importance of proper wealth management at a very young age, with inflation averaging as high as 1,000% a year. Gosh, that's a lot.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. It was vital to ensure that your money was always working for you. He started his career in the financial services industry in 2002, and his conviction that he is doing one of the most important jobs anyone can do in life by helping people save, grow, and preserve their assets is at the core of his success. Welcome, Danilo.
Thanks for having me.
Yay.
Oh, so exciting. Now, I personally know Danilo. He actually is my financial planner, and he's been doing great for me, and he's rock solid. I adore you.
Thank you, Dr.
Yeah. Aww. Yeah. But it's nice when you know that somebody's not just, you know, taking your money and you never know what they're doing.
Of course.
He communicates and he's always like, oh, things are changing. I need to talk to you. So I just feel like I'm in really good hands.
So it sounds like, I'd love to just segue right into that. It sounds like there's a lot of communication that has to go on with money and all that. And I'd love if you can speak to that a little bit.
Absolutely. I think communication and understanding your clients is one of the keys to my success as an advisor. People's lives are so complicated, and everyone is unique. Every situation is unique. So really understanding and communicating with your advisor is key to a successful relationship, as any relationship.
Sure.
Absolutely. Goes. And people have a lot of anxiety about money.
Oh.
Like a lot.
Absolutely.
We should tell the story.
The guy who brought us to the room here, the minute I introduced myself and told him what I did, he ran away.
He really did. He's like, I'm not good with money. And he just kind of scattered.
Do you think it's because people are afraid of money, so they just kind of like stick their head in the sand? They just want to deal with the here and now right now?
I think it's one of those taboos that people don't like to talk about. And, you know, in many families, you don't talk money on the table and you don't discuss how much money people make. I think our education system does a very poor job at educating youngster about money and financial issues. Simple stuff. It doesn't have to be too complicated.
Right.
So it becomes a thing that people don't talk about it. And it's kind of that the grass is greener on the other side. Everyone thinks that the neighbor has more money than them, so they feel ashamed or they feel inappropriate. It's interesting, yeah.
You know, interesting, because I know family background has a lot to do with how people end up experiencing their relationship to money. And, you know, my father being a Holocaust survivor and having, you know, had zero, like absolutely nothing, and being able to be a success in this country was, it was so meaningful to him that he actually was very open about talking to my sister and me about finances and what to watch out for and what to look for.
That's great.
He's always, you know, don't use credit cards if you can help it, if you can't pay for it now. So I actually really took that to heart. Wow. I'm just like, I've never had a credit card balance. I've paid off my credit card every single month.
I would say the number one thing everyone should strive to accomplish to do is you know, credit card, I kind of make this analogy, is equivalent to financial cancer, you know. It just kind of means that you're living beyond your means.
Yes.
There's no reason to have credit card debt if you have money to pay for things.
Right.
Pay for things, right?
Sure.
If you're carrying a balance, you know, it's because you spent more than what you have.
Yeah.
And I understand there are different circumstances. There are, you know, emergencies and things that happen. But if you plan properly, you should have an emergency fund. You should have, you know, an account that you can tap into if you have some sort of medical emergency or a situation where you need cash right away.
And what might be some alternatives to using a credit card for somebody who, let's say, they are in a pinch for a little while or life circumstance changes, they lose a job, they've established credit, but they don't have the money to pay for things? Are there different kinds of, like, small business loans or personal loans or things that...
Yeah, when you're in that situation where you don't have a job and
you can't get anything.
You can't, it's very hard to get access to credit. So, you know, that's when credit cards can be a lifesaver because you can tap into it. But as I said, ideally, you want to have, say, 3 months of your expenses saved up just in case something happens, you lose a job, you know, some medical issue.
Yeah.
So 3 months, 3 to 6 months of expenses saved up in an account that you don't have easy access
to. Yeah, exactly. Right.
That would be key.
So were you always a good saver yourself?
You know, I naturally not the best saver,
okay.
I have to admit.
I like the honesty.
Yes, absolutely. And what I do for my own personal finances, I just set my monthly contributions to go out from my checking account automatically. So I don't see it out of sight, out of mind.
Yeah.
I don't spend it. And then there's a concept called pay yourself first.
Uh-huh.
You want to pay yourself first. You're the most important bill you have.
Yeah.
You're more important than your Visa bill, your MasterCard bill. So by setting up your automatic contributions on a monthly basis within your budget, then you're free to spend the rest of the money that you have for your bills and expenses without feeling guilty that you're overspending because you already put your money aside. And that's kind of how I work with my clients.
I have a question about couples. So do you recommend that couples put their money together?
You know, that's a tough question. And when I am interviewing couples to become clients, one of the questions I ask them is how do they do their finances? And typically there's that 5 second awkward silence. and everyone is different. And some couples keep things separate. Some couples keep things separate, but then they have a joint account, joint expenses.
Yeah.
And some couples just put everything in
together,
one bucket and you know, go from there. It's really what works for them and their financial situation, you know, as they enter this marriage. You know, if it's equal, it's easier to make things joint.
Sure.
But when the situation is uneven, then it becomes a little bit more complicated.
I do think that also has to do with the background, because it's so funny, because I grew up and my parents, they did it separately. And, sometimes they put some stuff together, but they kind of had their own separate, and my husband's parents also had, like, separate, and we both didn't want to do that. We're like, no, we're married, let's do it together. And we both feel really strongly that it's like, we're on this together, let's do it. So, and because I think we both grew up in, like, kind of, you would hear, like, the fights about money, or it's like, no, this is what you have to pay, and this is what you have to, you know, and it was like, we didn't want to deal with that. So, isn't that interesting?
Yeah. And I would have stereotyped that first round couples getting married, that they would be more blended, and then if there's been a divorce in the situation, that people get a little bit more scared,
then
they don't want to keep things more separate. Do you notice that at all?
I think that's a correct assessment.
So they start off.
The idealism, you start out, especially when people are young.
Yeah,
right?
Of course.
It's like
usually
neither one of them has anything. So it's you can't steal my pennies because I don't have any.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And idealistically, yes, you know, you're married, you want to combine everything, you want to share everything.
Sure.
So if the situation is simpler, it helps for that to happen.
Right.
But when the situation is a little bit more complicated, then that's couples come to us for advice.
Right.
And, you know, again, we got to find what works for you.
I was just going to say, it's like whatever people are comfortable with.
Yeah.
I mean, that's really what it comes down to, I think.
Oh, we have, you know, clients who have this, you know, complicated situations. They have multiple checking and savings accounts.
Oh, wow.
And they transfer money, this and that. So you don't want to go that far either.
Yeah.
Then you're spending your whole month
organizing your accounts.
That stresses me out. Oh, my God. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
And okay, so just for, in terms of legal matters, if a couple, your actual retirement account, right, a 401k or SEP IRA or something, that's not community property, correct?
No. If you're married, everything is community property.
Oh, it
property,
is.
Especially
but
here in California.
What about inheritance?
Inheritance is separate property.
Ah.
So inheritance is separate property. So if you, up to a point where you keep it separate. So if you receive an inheritance, but then you commingle with your joint funds, then that separate property is now part of your marriage.
I see.
But as long as you keep it separate, it will always be your separate property.
Do you think that men or women are more willing to have joint accounts?
That's a good question. it's like, I don't know how to answer this one.
Yeah, I'm going to be in trouble.
Yeah.
I think in, you know, stereotyping, women tend to be more prone to have joint accounts and want to combine everything and let's do this together, where men kind of sometimes have, you know, they don't
They're scared.
They
the woman's going to spend all the money. Yeah.
Sure. You said it.
I mean, come on. It's, yeah. I think most of the time are the women the spenders and the men the most of the time?
I think that's a stereotype.
Okay.
I think, and especially here in LA, I would say it's 50-50.
Yeah.
I would say everyone here is a spender, right?
Right.
If you're
exactly.
living out here in LA, you're it's already true. Spending money. But in general, I would say it's 50-50.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, really interesting. It is funny, like, when I look at my friends, like, my couple friends, and, like, it, you know, some of the husbands are the spenders, and some of the women are the savers, and vice versa. It's just sort of interesting
it
to
is.
Hear.
And, you know, we all have different interests, and, you know, women like to shop and clothes and shoes. We all know that. But, you know, guys like cars.
Of course.
And, you know, other expensive things
as
well. So it's really a 50-50.
You're a saver.
I just don't fit any of those
stereotypes. You are a saver.
I mean, I have always kind of been more of, like, in a lot of my relationships, a little bit more of the provider. So I think I have a little bit more of that masculine energy that it's like, you know, being in charge of and protecting the finances. Christopher's much more of a spender than I am.
Wow.
I could care less about shoes and clothes and, but I love to travel.
Yes.
I hoard my savings so that I can just go hog wild to go wherever I want, whenever I want to do it.
Yeah. Sure.
I think you brought, Dr. Deborah, you brought a good point when you said, basically your upbringing,
know,
how you were raised has a lot to do with how your vision of money. And I see that in my clients, and this is, you know, we're our official title as financial advisors, it's kind of misleading because we're almost like financial psychologists.
Trying
to understand what leads their behavior
and
what leads someone to spend more than they make, or what leads someone not to want to save for their future. And a lot of times it's from their upbringing. It's from how they were raised. A lot of people maybe had money, lost it, and, you know, they have that relationship with money because of it. And and a lot of people, and you hear great success stories, you know, people who they're not necessarily big money-making people, but they have saved up money over their lives, and they leave a nice legacy to their family, and they live a comfortable life, but not luxurious. And you see that as well.
And you would have witnessed a lot of people devastated by the 2008 decline and all of that. Yeah. How did you help people not to, like, want to be suicidal? I mean, some people, it's like they lost everything.
Yes, and that's a legit question. 2008 was a difficult time for us in our business. And, you know, one of the things that we do with our clients is everything is customized to their situation. So if you are about to retire in 2009, okay, you are not going to have all your money in the stock market in 2008. You have to have you know, a portion of your money that's in more secured accounts and to avoid something like that to happen. So customization of your investments as you get closer to your goals is key. And this is where a lot of people kind of fail because they kind of set and forget, right? They they set their investment allocation or what they want to do, and they just kind of leave it, and they'll make changes until something like 2008 happens and kind of wipes you out, and you're like, oh my God, you know, I you know, hate the stock market, it's a scam. But it's not, it's just that you went in unprepared and you didn't have the right information. So you know, part of our job is to make sure that our investments are in line with our clients' tolerance for risk. And, you know, you have clients who are very aggressive. We have clients that are very conservative. So we have to match that with the investments that they have.
Will you flat out tell somebody that what they want to do is a bad idea?
Absolutely.
I love that.
The way I see it is, you know, if I go to a doctor and I have cancer, mm-hmm. I'm dying, you know, I don't, you know, I need him to tell me exactly that. And you know, clients come in and sometimes, you know, they have this crazy ideas, you know, oh, I want to retire in 5 years. Okay, you know, let's see. How much have you saved?
Yeah.
Oh, I haven't started yet. I was like, okay, so that's your plan, you know?
And, right.
And, you know, oh, I have this script or I have this play.
Yeah.
You know? And so, uh-huh. so you have to tell them that that's not a plan, you know? That's
right.
Kind of a hope. And
exactly.
You need to plan for something more concrete than, you know.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's very interesting.
You know, it'd be really helpful, I think, for our listeners to understand the difference between a stock brokerage firm and a certified financial planner, because they are really different in terms of commissions. And
yeah, absolutely. That's a great question. It's actually, there's a big transformation happening in my business right
okay.
now, which is a transition from the stock broker mentality, where they charge you commissions, where they pitch you to, you know, buy products, mm-hmm. to what we are, which is a fiduciary. A fiduciary, by law, has to do what's in the client's best interest.
Yeah.
So our job as financial planners is to provide financial advice that's independent, that's unbiased, and that's who you should look to work with, mm-hmm. with an independent fiduciary financial advisor. Who doesn't have a conflict of interest in trying to sell a company's product, right?
Right.
So if you know, work with an advisor who works for a proprietary company, they have their own products, they have an incentive to sell
of course.
Those products.
Yeah.
And by not having that conflict, I think you get more objective advice.
Let's take a pause for our sponsor.
Okay.
Hello, this is Ian Oliver, author of best-selling book, Getting Back on Top, encouraging you to consider using my relationship consulting services where I help people transition from being married to divorced to single, one of the most difficult transitions in life. You can check out some of this information on my website, secondchanceatromance.com. And remember, all of the profits from our activities go to two very important children-related charities, so it's all going to a great cause, helping you and helping them. And I look forward to working with you. Thank you.
Thank you so much. And if anybody would like to get a phone call in here for our guest, Danilo Kawasaki, please do so at 323-203-0815. It's always interesting to get our money matters solved.
It really is. It is. There's so much psychology behind it. I mean, even when I listen to those like shows on Sirius, you know, satellite radio, whatever, about the financial shows, I mean, there's so much behind it. And it is. It's almost like exactly what you said. You're a financial psychologist. I love that.
Yeah. What about you, Kelly? Are you a spender or a saver?
You know what? I'm probably in the middle. I mean, I think compared to most women, I think I'm decent. Like my husband's always like, yeah, you know, I'm grateful. Probably to you, I'm a huge spender. But you are, I think, are in the total, I don't know anybody as good as Deborah.
But I'm learning. I mean, I'm actually learning to spend more and worry less because I have actually built a nice, you know, nest egg for myself to some degree, as long as Danilo doesn't lose it for me, which of course he won't.
I won't. Don't worry.
Right.
No, but it's been, you know, it's so I feel like a little bit more that I can sort of rest into, if I want that, okay, it's okay. I really can't afford that. But it's changing my mind shift because I really lived in poverty mentality because I never wanted anything for nothing. I always wanted to work for things. So.
Sure.
You know, it's like I lived in an apartment where my heat didn't work for an entire year because I thought it would be interesting to see what it would be like to have no heat. And
what?
I didn't want to spend the money.
Oh, my God. That's crazy.
And with zero furniture. I had my piano. I had two beanbag chairs, one mattress, and boxes for a whole year. Because because it was like I could only afford a really small space, and I didn't want to ask my parents for money because I wanted
to save,
just to discipline myself. I mean, that was kind of dumb. But anyway.
Would you have thought I was a spender? Were you going to say you're a spender?
Because you and I went shopping once.
Yeah,
we're putzing around in the mall, and I was watching. You know, what kind of bags are you actually looking at? But you were kind of middle of the road. I would say.
Probably.
Yeah,
I think the key is balanced.
Yes.
Yes. Exactly.
You know, I'm not a hardcore. You know, you have to save every penny you make. You know, you got to live your life and enjoy. And
yes.
You know, we work very hard for our money. So if you take pleasure in buying things, you know, then go for it. As long as it's not in the detriment of your future goals.
Sure.
You know,
sure.
You're not going to use your kids' college education to go take a trip,
yeah.
or you're not going to take money from your 401k to mm-hmm. go buy a car.
Sure.
As long as it's within reason, yeah. I think a balanced approach is the way to go.
I was just thinking while you were talking about, God, now I just lost my train of thought, but I was just going to say something about money. About, well, I guess the big question I would love from your perspective is, do you feel like people with more money are happier?
I love that laugh.
They say more money, more problems, right?
Yeah.
You know, you just got to be careful what you wish for. Money certainly doesn't bring happiness. I have clients who have a lot of money and they're not necessarily happier
yeah.
than my clients who maybe don't have as much. I think the key is to... it's how you use your money.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, money, I tell my clients this, it's not the end, it's means to an end,
right?
It's what you do with it. And, you know, for a lot of people, for example, having financial security is important to them.
Yeah.
So they like to save, they like to see their accounts growing
mm-hmm.
and know that they have, you know, a good chunk saved up.
Sure.
Because that gives them financial security. And other people don't need as much. They you know, they need to know that they have
yeah.
certain amounts stashed away, but, you know, they also like to live their lives and do their thing. So it's, you know, it's not the end.
Right.
Be all, but certainly it helps.
Yeah,
to
I was
going to
say there's got to be a certain like basic level of money that
yeah.
does give somebody at least the opportunity to have happiness. Because
yeah,
living in poverty, I just can't imagine
right.
anybody being
but
happy.
I think the misconception here is you have people who make a lot of money who also spend a lot of money,
yeah.
so they don't really have much to show
exactly.
for at
right.
the end of the month, right? Because they made X amount of money, but
mm-hmm.
they spent
it all. Sure.
So
yeah.
versus someone who maybe makes less,
mm-hmm.
but is able to save
mm-hmm.
A little
yeah.
bit of money every month, that person actually has a higher net worth than
sure.
the person who makes maybe 10 times more money
yeah.
than they make.
I know what I was going to say, by
okay,
the way.
Good.
I was thinking about deprivation and how I was reading a study that if you deprive yourself in any area, you can sometimes sort of overindulge in another.
Mm-hmm.
So in other words, they've done studies, if you are dieting, then you may be more apt to spend money because you
sure.
feel like you're,
mm-hmm.
It's like,
yeah. Yeah.
And so I wonder if like serious savers who are like kind of anorexic with money, if in other areas of their life, they're, overeating or overindulging or,
yeah.
It's kind of an interesting mentality. Yeah.
Is that question directed at me?
No, not at all. Not at all. No, I wasn't thinking about you. No, I was just thinking about, I have a friend who's like really, she calls herself anorexic with money and it's really hard for her to spend. So it is kind of funny how you have the people who just have no problem spending and then the other people who really like have guilt or, something associated with it.
Yeah. And typically it is something a little bit more traumatic that happened in their lives, where
mm-hmm.
maybe you didn't grow up with a lot of money or, you lost a job and you know what it is to not,
sure.
be able to pay your bills. But,
yeah.
Overall, I think, again, having a balanced approach to
yeah.
doing things in life in general,
sure.
I think is the way to go.
So why is it that so many lottery winners, professional athletes and such go broke within the first year of their payday?
That's such an interesting topic. And I did a lot of reading on this prior to the show and just to kind of try to understand their mentality. And this would be a good question for you guys to answer for me as well, because there's something that I read that basically talks about lottery winners unconsciously spend all their winnings to go back to their comfort zone.
Oh.
Because they're not comfortable having all this money.
Right.
Very interesting.
So unconsciously, it's not on purpose. Unconsciously, they loan money to their uncles. They invest in businesses that will fail. They'll, buy cars and spend all their money because they're trying to get back to that comfort zone that they're used to, which is not having money. So
wow.
I don't know. What do you
Well, I was
going
to say it's kind of akin to a lot of prisoners who end up back in prison because
yes.
they can't handle the freedom.
Yes.
They actually are more comfortable in a confined
in the structure
without all the freedom. So
yeah.
yeah, I think that could be very true. And also, no money. A lot of people, I think that might be more true of people who never had any money, and then they've just come into a big
mm-hmm.
pile of
correct, which
change.
Is typically the case for lottery winners.
Sure,
yes,
sure.
Exactly.
So that they don't have the skill set or the discipline to know how to.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Don't even have the
sure.
The brain power behind it to know what to do. I mean,
yeah.
they need someone like you, like instantaneously.
Absolutely.
Yeah, exactly.
Whoa, slow down here.
Yeah.
Take this chunk and go hog
yeah.
wild to have whatever.
Right.
right, one you
exactly.
want. But then we got to really be serious with
yeah.
this.
And I think with athletes, it's a little different story. Athletes, you know, they have a very short career.
Yes.
For the most part. So maybe they're, you know, making the kind of money they're making for 10 years, but then that's it. And
right.
they're 35 and they're retired and they have, you know, 50 years ahead of them. But, you know, they live a very lavish lifestyle, you know, expensive houses and cars. And what I think they fail to recognize is how much it costs to maintain
that
lifestyle.
Yeah.
You know, you have to pay property taxes, you have to maintain your house, you know, you have 15 bedrooms, you know, 13 bathrooms, and you got to need someone to clean and keep the house up to date. So they really, I think within 3-5 years, there's studies that show that, you know, many athletes go broke within 3-5 years of retiring. And these are people who made, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars during
they
their career.
It's amazing.
They just blew it
all. Yeah. So let's get to a few specific situations that probably come up all the time. So you're newly in love with a guy, and you guys are going to be getting married, and he's got $40,000 in credit card debt, and you have never had debt. This is not applying to me. I'm just simply asking. What would you advise them to do? How could they handle that situation?
But pause for 1 second. If you've just tuned in, we are talking with Danilo Kowalski. Is that
Kawasaki?
Kawasaki. I knew I was going to say it wrong.
Just like the motorcycle.
Exactly. Kawasaki. And he is the co-founder, vice president, and COO of Gerber Kawasaki. So he's a financial planner, just if you tuned in.
So what was the question again, Dr. Deborah?
Oh, so, you know, a young couple, they have just gotten together. They're planning to get married, and he's got $40,000 in debt. Oh, let's throw in one other piece. And she's always wanted to have a big wedding. There's not a lot, tons of money in the family. So they, you know, she has some money saved. He's got all this debt. What should they do?
I think the first and most important thing is they need to address it. They need to talk about it. It's going to be a tough one because credit card debt is not good, and you want to get rid of it. You want to pay it off as soon as possible. You know, it's they're going to have a heart-to-heart conversation, and who's going to be responsible for this debt. And if she has the means to help him pay the debt, they're getting married, they're going to combine their lives, you know, might as well help him pay off the debt. And then vice versa, you know, if her dream is to have this big wedding, then he should step in and help plan, save for the wedding as well, and do it together as a couple. It's easier said than done, but that's what I would recommend in that case.
Yeah.
It's so funny you hear those stories about, like, people getting married, and it was like, I didn't know that he or she had so much debt. And it's like, it's that hidden secret.
Yeah. And once you're married, you combine your finances.
Exactly.
I mean, creditors can go after your spouse if you don't pay your bills. So you got to have that conversation. You can't hide that. You know, it's like, you know, a difficult conversation to have, but it's something that needs to be addressed.
What about a parent? Like, what if a parent is in debt and then they pass away? Is the debt just sort of like erased, or did they go after, like, the relatives? Or I've always wanted to know that.
The debt becomes the debt of the deceased estate.
Okay.
So once the estate is settled, the creditors have a claim against the estate.
Yeah.
So if there's money there to
come
be,
after it.
They'll come after.
I see.
But they won't come after the relatives.
Right, exactly. Things like that.
It will end with the deceased.
With that person. Yeah, that makes sense.
Unless you owe money to Uncle Vinny.
Right, exactly.
Uncle Vinny, yes.
Yeah. That's so funny.
And you don't want your legs cut off.
Yeah.
Right.
Right, exactly.
What would you advise for parents with young children? When should they start considering how to teach their children about finances?
Great
and
question.
Also, what kinds of savings plans can parents either provide for their children or help their children start learning to provide for themselves?
Great question. I have two kids. My oldest is 10. So maybe 3 years ago, I kind of started talking to her about money and the value of things. And I told her that every time she saved money, that I would match.
Gotcha.
Oh, that's nice.
And put it away in an account that she can use to buy a car. She said when she's 16, she wants to buy a Mercedes.
Oh,
she already knows.
she's not going to get a Mercedes. Right. She's saving for a car. So so that kind of got her excited about mm-hmm. saving some of the money. Yeah. She'll go out and spend the money, buy clothes, yeah. whatever she wants. But she'll come back with change, and then I'll put...
Oh, that's nice.
That's sweet.
Yeah, so it really helped. So I think for kids, the main account that parents should have for their kids is a college plan.
Yeah.
You know, college expenses, college tuition is very expensive.
Right.
And I think UCLA right now is, you know, $30,000 a year. USC is $50,000 a year.
Plus your living expenses. Plus yeah, that's just the tuition.
Absolutely.
And then it's like it's easily a,
and this
it's
is
quarter
today's
of a million
dollars.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, if you have a 10 years
old, exactly.
15 years from now, it would be significantly more expensive.
Oh my God.
So, you know, there's a great college account that you can put money in, and the money grows tax-free.
Right.
You know, people just don't know about it. But,
yeah.
you know, it's specifically for college, so you can't use it to buy a car or,
sure.
or take a vacation. Mm-hmm. But you can put money aside as little as $100 a month.
Wow.
And set up a monthly automatic plan. Mm-hmm. And when your kid is ready to go for college, yeah. you take the money out, you pay for your tuition, and you don't have to pay any taxes yeah. on the gains of that money. So there are definitely alternative uh-huh. Options for parents.
The downside of that, though, is then you have your kid who says, I don't want to go to college or I don't want to finish.
Interesting.
So then there are some penalties that come along with that.
Yes. So if you withdraw the money and uh-huh. don't use for college education purposes, you could be penalized by the IRS because that money was earmarked for college.
Sure.
But,
makes
you
sense.
Know, you do have options yeah. where if you have a sibling, you can transfer the money to
Yeah.
Your next of kin and mm-hmm. Cousin and things like that.
Right.
So there are options. Yeah.
Let's say somebody wants to loan money to a family member.
Mm-hmm.
How would you?
I'll tell you a funny story. My dad, who's in Brazil, so he's not listening.
he can, though.
he can.
Yeah,
that's
exactly.
True. That's
yes.
true. That's true. I don't know how well his English is. So, but he maybe about a year ago called me and he needed some money. And my sister wanted to help too, and I told my sister, say, Tula, if we do this, forget about it. We're not gonna see the money
yeah.
back. So as long as you're okay with that
mm-hmm.
outcome, then let's help. But you know, I think when you lend money to a relative, you expect it to pay it back. They
yeah.
don't pay it back, and it causes tension,
a rift.
Stress, a rift,
yeah.
and that's when things go south. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So in my view, if you're making a loan to a dear friend, a relative, it's almost like you have to treat it as that money's gone.
Yeah.
If you get it back, that's
right.
great.
Yeah.
Don't expect it back.
Absolutely.
Or the other extreme would be to make it very official, where you have a contract.
Yeah.
Where you have...
Like a promisory note.
Yes.
Yeah, sure.
Or
something.
Exactly.
Sure.
Where
yeah.
you have them sign,
mm-hmm.
notarize it, make it as
yeah.
official as you can. So, you know, it's
yeah.
it's a business deal, not
right.
a personal loan.
Sure.
It's, you know, I'll give you this much, but you're going to pay me interest. You're going to
yeah.
pay me this much every month for this for
yeah.
this long. And then hopefully they're able to do that. But in my case, yeah, I'm still waiting.
Yeah, exactly. Right, right.
And I knew it. And this is exactly why I took the approach I did. And
smart.
It was a gift to my dad. And I'm happy with that.
Yeah, I totally agree. I had a friendship that I lost completely after loaning money. And then they were taking a Mexican vacation. And I was really pissed because
yeah.
I didn't go on vacation that year in order to
oh my
help
God.
Out. And never saw a penny back.
That's terrible.
But
wow.
happened to be that she was married to a what turned out to be a felon who was a sociopath, and so he was really the one behind that
oh my
navigation.
God.
So I couldn't really hold her accountable
yeah.
for that later
yeah.
on down the line. So we are very good friends now. But that's really that it hurts so much when you go out of your way to help somebody, and
sure.
you know there is the promise
yeah.
of return,
yeah.
and
right.
using the money in a way
yeah.
that you didn't anticipate.
Yeah, and I think it's important to understand the reason why they are in a financial bind. Right?
That's a good
because
point.
Because that will kind of
yeah.
say, okay, what are the chances I'm going to get this money back? You know, she went to Vegas. She's going to a trip in Mexico. You know,
yeah.
chances are I'm not going to see this money back.
Right.
But, you know, it could be a legit reason.
Exactly.
Where, you know, they were
yeah.
laid off and lost their job and they have bills
mm-hmm.
to pay. And, you know, as soon as they get a job, they'll pay you back. And there are,
right.
you know, success stories
yeah.
that come out of that, too.
Yeah, I recently loaned a friend money for her husband needed a medical treatment, and they were waiting on a grant, and they couldn't start it without getting the money. So we did it that way.
That's nice.
A promissory note and secured with collateral, with all that kind of stuff. And then that went really smooth.
That's nice.
A lot of people have lost friendships over
Absolutely.
Money.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah,
and families are broken because of money, too. I think a thing I've seen maybe too many times is inheritance.
Yeah.
When a parent dies and the kids have to divide the inheritance and they start fighting over
right.
things. That's a common one. And,
sure.
And this is why it's important to have your will,
right?
Living trust, your estate mm-hmm. plan done, mm-hmm. and so everyone knows exactly what each
right,
will
exactly.
get, and hopefully
sure.
there's no fight. My own family. My grandfather died unexpectedly, 30 years ago, and my mom and her siblings, they fought over stuff
mm-hmm.
because my grandfather didn't have anything written down.
Right.
So,
yes.
I want this, I want that, and it's a tense situation.
I've encountered a number of problems recently with some of my clients and their parents who have passed away
mm-hmm.
Recently who did not do the proper things about stuff.
Right.
And maybe there's one person who's been allowed to live in the house
yep.
uh-huh.
and then they can't sell the house, so that
yep.
person's like squatting in the house.
Oh.
Do you have some advice maybe for parents, what positions to not put their children in the future? One of them is creating a living trust with very specifications.
Yes, I would say even before that, a living trust would be ideal. But even simpler than a living mm-hmm. trust is just to write a will.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you can hand write your own will and have it
notarized.
It
yeah.
or witnessed by two
uh-huh.
or three people, I think it is.
Okay.
And that can serve as a legal
yeah.
document.
Mm-hmm.
It's something. People can still contest
sure.
and this and that.
Sure.
Because this is what people do. But and if you want to take a step above that, then a living trust is a legal document
sure.
prepared by lawyers. That basically your wishes have to be carried forward in the manner
mm-hmm.
that the living trust stipulates. So that avoids any problems
yeah.
because there's no contesting it. There's no
sure.
discussing it. It's, I want this to go to that person, that to go to
yeah.
that person, and that's the way it is.
Mm-hmm. I wanted to just share a tip that I want to know, what you think of. But I heard this very young, and I'm happy I did, is to never get those credit cards from stores that say, you can save 10% off if you get the Gap card. Or if you Target, you can get, and so I'm just curious, your take.
That's how they get you.
Yes.
That's exactly how they get you. And you should avoid those
yeah.
Cards. They're not good for your credit score.
Exactly.
And that's how they get you to spend more money.
Yes.
Because, and there, it's funny because people have a misperception about savings, right? You go to the grocery store and you buy your things, and it says, you saved $15 today.
Right.
You actually didn't save that money. You just didn't spend it.
Exactly. Yeah.
You'd save that money if you take $15 from your checking account and you put it away.
Good
point. So it's the same thing for the store, 10% discount. Oh, you say, I'll save $40. No,
yeah.
you just didn't spend $40.
$40.
Right?
Exactly.
You're going to spend it anyways.
Yeah.
Right? If you really want to save that $40, you got to get it out of your check and put it elsewhere.
Sure.
And then you're really saving that money.
Do you recommend a percentage of a paycheck that people should save, or a dollar amount, or what?
A percentage is easy because it
right.
levels
mm-hmm.
everyone.
And what would that be?
Beginning percentage should be at least 10%.
Yeah.
That's a beginning rate. And if you really want to accomplish goals, such as sending your kids to college and retiring
yeah.
one day, I would say 20-30%
wow.
is what's going to take. So it's really a commitment
mm-hmm.
that you have to make to, one of the discussions that we have is, what are your priorities in life, right? It's,
mm-hmm.
If you want to retire one day, we don't have pension plans anymore. Our parents worked for a company for 30 years
yeah.
and then
yeah.
retired with the full pension. That doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah.
So we got to create our own pension in a
mm-hmm.
way by saving our own money. And that's where the 20-30% comes
yeah.
in.
And not relying exclusively on Social Security. People have no idea
no,
that
so
they'll be living in poverty.
It's
yeah. really
interesting that you
plan.
Brought up Social Security, because today they just announced a raise for Social Security for 2017, and it's 0.3%. That's the raise that people who are getting Social Security today will be getting for 2017 minimum. It doesn't even cover inflation.
Wow.
It really puts the burden, the responsibility to save on us.
Yes.
And this is why I feel my job is so important.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Okay, let's pause for our sponsor, and then we'll come back with some closing tips and some promotions you're giving away.
Are you frustrated by the tremendous challenges that so many millions of people face in your dating life? If you are, we have your solution. Come talk to me, Ian Oliver, author of best-selling book Getting Back on Top, and my website, secondchanceatromance.com. We can help you. And remember, all of the profits from our activities go to two very important children-related charities, so it's all going to a great cause, helping you and helping them.
Thank you, Ian. We really appreciate you. So we are closing up pretty soon with our guest, Danilo. This has been so informative. I think maybe we can close with giving some of our listeners some ways to get out of the paralysis of making decisions about what to do next with finances. What would it be like, three steps someone could just take today to get themselves in that direction?
Sure. I think the first and foremost is to work on a budget. It's something that you guys are probably cringing right now. No one wants to do it.
Yeah.
But you need to know where you're spending your money, how much is going out. You may not feel that the $5 coffee that you have every day, it will make a difference. But, you know, $100 a month put away for 30 years, it would be a nice lump sum at the end of that 30-year period. So work on a budget. Know where your money is going. Make sure you set your goals and priorities, that you, things that you want to achieve. And, you know, maybe this is a shameless plug, but you have to meet with a professional. You have to talk to a financial planner, because this is not simple. If it was easy, everyone would be doing it. This is not easy. And the same way that you work with a psychologist when you have an issue, a nutritionist, you work with doctors, you should have a financial planner in your corner, someone who you can trust, and hopefully who's a fiduciary, independent advisor. So he can keep you in check and making sure that you're doing the right things with your money.
And you are generously going to give away to our listeners today something.
Yes. You know, my business partner, Ross Gerber, and I started our company 6 years ago. And one of the things that we didn't want to be is another large bank. We didn't want to be, you know, catering to the ultra high net worth. So we eliminated minimums. So our firm has no investment minimum. Most firms, you need to have $500,000, $1 million before they work with you. We don't have an investment minimum. So today, I want to give everyone, all your listeners, an opportunity to call one of our advisors, schedule a 30-minute consultation for free. No strings attached.
That's great.
Take advantage of it. We have 20 qualified, awesome advisors. And they will spend 30 minutes with you to answer your questions, you know, maybe provide you some advice, and then to see where we go from there.
And how will they be able to get that? They will call and say.
So they can call.
They want to say Dr. Deborah and Kelly.
And the code word would be Dr. Deborah and Kelly. Make sure to mention that.
And where can they find you, or what's the best way?
So there's our phone number is 310-441-9393, and our website is www.gerber, G-E-R-B-E-R, the baby food, Kawasaki. The
motorcycle.
Yes. I love
baby
that.
Baby food on a motorcycle.
Exactly.
Baby food on a motorcycle.
GerberKawasaki.com.
Do you have a motorcycle?
I don't.
You don't?
No. My mom, who was a Kawasaki, had a Kawasaki motorcycle.
Oh, she did?
Until she fell, and I saw how she broke her leg, and that was enough for me not to make that mistake again. Yeah. So call in, send us an email, a message, mention Dr. Deborah and Callie, and we'll give you a 30-minute complimentary consultation.
That's really beautiful. Very generous. Thank you so much. You've been a great guest.
So interesting.
You're welcome.
Still have hundreds more questions, but
I
get to ask him
exactly alone.
But I will. Just another plug for Danilo. He's just an excellent guy. Feels like I'm such good hands.
And I like
security.
His energy. Calm and relaxed energy. You know, it's nice.
Yeah, information provides security. You know, when we get more information about things, it gives us comfort zone.
Absolutely.
Sure. Yeah.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Sure. Thank you. So next week, we're just going to withhold information because
this is
just going to be a surprise guest next
week. It could be very exciting.
Any fun things up for the week?
What am I doing the rest of the week? I feel like the weeks are like flying. Do you feel that way too?
I do.
It's like crazy. I'm just thinking, oh my God.
I've got one goal, get through the floors and the cats don't escape from the room.
That's your goal. Exactly. Well, I can't wait for Halloween, which is coming up soon.
That's true.
Yeah,
and
love it.
You're not going to tell us on
no.
what your costumes are.
I never tell.
Very surprising.
Yes.
Yay.
Very cool. All right. We'll see you guys next week. Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening.
You're listening to the Dr. Deborah and Therapist Kelly Show, only on LA Talk Radio.